Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Heck yes. After Thing, of course, is the show where we talk about what it's like to be an independent creative, and we do our best to give you advice, bad advice from people who haven't hit their targets yet.
Oh boy.
A real hard sell, huh?
I mean, look, man, honesty, that's key, right?
So, gentlemen, and I'm including you, Bryce, since Hello. We're missing somebody there who I forget.
That's I'm Bryce. Always the third seat on After Things. Hello.
Has Hi. Always been, yeah.
Forever.
Bryce Nechcom Castillo here, who is the fourth member of Weird Things and After Things. So I'm excited. I'm excited. On the last episode, which hardly feels like a week ago because it wasn't, I said I was pressing the button to submit my app to the App Store, my StoryVoice app, StoryVoiceApp.com, my voice dictation software tool for the iPhone, which allows you to dictate and it tries to intelligently figure out punctuation. So if you want to do dialogue or whatever when you're writing a book, makes it easy to do that. Well,
it got
this
rejected.
Morning, what's that?
It got rejected. They said, no, thank you, sir.
That was my fear.
Yeah.
That was what I was afraid of. And I got some notification. I was expecting that. But no, accepted. Now officially in the App Store.
Look at that.
All right. I just downloaded it. I have it on my phone. Talk me through the process here. Do I hold down the
You're gonna have to, yeah, hold down the button. Press the button.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then what?
Does it ask for permission to do anything?
It did. It says.
And you press, okay.
Okay. Got it. All right.
So hold down the button and say, hello, my name is Brian.
Hello, my name is Brian, period. Oh, wait.
You didn't need to say period, though.
I didn't need to say period.
Yeah.
And it actually put two periods there when I did that.
That's great.
All right. Hello, my name is Brian, she said seductively.
Is in the paragraph buffer at the bottom.
So is there rules? What do I do on all this?
You can look at the instructions or watch the video.
Oh, I can't while I'm talking to you, of course.
I will talk you through it. Okay.
All right, here we go. So, new document. Ready. Here,
yeah. So what you do, the way it works is you record one sentence at a time. So you hold down the button and you say a sentence and then you let go of it.
Okay. All right, here we go. You've been straight cold busted, she said.
Now you let go of it, and it should appear in the lower section of the paragraph buffer, right? So it's building your story or one paragraph at a time by adding sentences in that buffer.
Got it.
Now, if you just tap the button once, it'll appear in the main document.
Oh, right on. Okay.
Oh, cool. So you can, like, confirm it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that's correct. Okay. And then, and so.
What happened? No, what did it do?
You have a redo function, so that's kind of why.
There we go. To redo. Okay, so let's say for example, this time.
Wait. What did it put up there?
Unfortunately, I let go before I said, so I don't think it understood that I was doing a dialogue thing. Let me try it again. Okay. You've been straight cold busted, she said. And then, okay, so what it's got a double hash thing, less than there.
Now, what's waiting for is that's the paragraph buffer. Once you tap that button, that tells you, hey, this part's the dialogue, and this part is whoever was the speaker or the attributed speaker.
So what should I do to enter this into my story?
Do you want to add more to the paragraph? That sounds like a whole paragraph, so just tap it once. Tap the button once.
Oh, wow. Oh, it does. Oh, I was fooled. I was fooled because I didn't realize that it has its own nomenclature here. So now it transformed it and it put in quotation marks, you've been straight cold busted, comma, end quotes, she said. All right. Julia sauntered across the room seductively. And then, okay, so in this case, let's say I wanted to add a comma before seductively. How would I edit this?
this time you would just, as you say it, you would say comma, or just tap that and put it into the main document, and then you can click on it and then put your finger where you want to add the comma and just do that.
Got it. All right. So I'm clicking there. There we go.
Yeah, it is a, the first minute or two for people, it's like, wait, what's going on? But once you get the modality.
Okay. All right. Here we go. Let me
give it a real hard. All right. Here we go. And
I just tap or I hold it while I'm talking. Hold
it while you're talking to hold one sentence at a time.
Standing alone in the vast, wide open space under a sky blue sky, Brian and Andrew fought the robot. Okay.
So that's a pretty long one. There should have commas in there.
It didn't do commas, but I can add those manually, right?
So okay. Yeah, remember, commas are somewhat subjective, so it won't try to guess commas.
Got it. Okay, so I'm not going to worry about it. All right, here we go. You sure do suck at role-playing, Brian, said Justin.
All right. Did it give?
Hold on. I mumbled.
I'm still holding it.
All right. Let me get rid of this. Okay. So what happens if it does it wrong and I don't want to add it?
Hold down the button while if it's still in the paragraph buffer, just say redo that.
Oh, got it. Redo that. Oh, you said it and then it listened. Here we go. All right. You sure suck at role-playing, Justin said. And then there's that. Got it? Hey, man, leave Brian alone, shouted Andrew. Dude, that's amazing.
Yeah, so if you want to do, the part of I created this was for doing writing dialogue. I thought it'd be like nice to do very normal back and forth dialogue. And you can do another moment. But if you want to do that, you don't have to keep saying he said, she said. It follows structure. You add sentences to the paragraph buffer, then you tap that button and it puts that paragraph up in the top section. So let's say, hold down the button right now.
All right.
And
I'm holding
a
button.
My name is Brian.
My name is Brian. And then I let go.
Okay. Now hold down the button again and say, I am a podcaster.
I am a podcaster. Oh, you know what? It seems like I'm letting go a little bit too fast. Let me try that again. All right. Here we go.
Okay.
My name is Brian. I am a podcaster.
And then what I want you to say, this is what I do, he said.
This is what I do, he said.
Now tap the button.
Got it. My name is Brian. I am a podcaster. This is what I do, comma, end quote, he said. Yeah, that's amazing.
So the whole thing, it wrapped all the other sentences inside of that dialogue. So that's why we use the paragraph buffer, so it knows, oh, this is all part of what you're saying here.
That's great. So let me throw a question at it. Like, how many robots do you have exactly, she asked.
Now it should get rid of the question mark because it's...
Oh, it nailed it. How many robots do you have exactly, question mark, end quote, she asked. That's awesome.
The answer to the question...
I hold in my hand the power of the universe, said Elon Musk. Definitely understood Elon Musk, just saying.
Yeah.
That's great. Oh, this is awesome.
So how do you output this data?
I'm sorry, you have to pay a $20 fee per document.
No!
Double dipping!
So in the upper right corner, what do you see?
There's three dots. I click on the dots and you got share, email as an attachment. Okay. You could turn auto punctuation on, the word counter on or off, the regular file. I'm going to do the word counter on.
Yeah, so you do the share and you just email it. It saves it as a .txt document. You can copy, paste it, whatever.
And it keeps a running log of character names. So like, let's say I have
you add those. So
yeah,
what you
okay,
do,
so
let's...
here, I'm going to add Zyklotron -7.
That's going
to
be good.
Just so you know, it won't know Siri. What that will do is Siri has to know that that's a name. So if you put Zyklotron 7 into your phone book, it'll know. What this will do, let's say somebody has a name like, Brian Robert. How do I know Brian and Robert are two different people or one person? If you put Brian Robert into the characters, it'll then know that that is one person and not a Brian and a Robert.
Okay, so I'm doing Brian Robert on here. Back.
Or Brian Robert Maine.
My name is Brian Robert Maine, you jerk. he screamed while sad.
This is good.
It did format it correctly, even though that was a nonsense.
You added the name.
It would be more like, where are you going, Brian Robert replied.
Oh, got it. All right. What are you playing at? Brian Robert asked.
Okay.
Interesting. Okay, so I think I do need to add it to Siri on there because it says, what are you playing at, Brian Robert asked.
I'd have to see. I need to check to make sure that it's parsing that right. That's on me, not on Siri. So I'll take a look and see what that did.
Dude, this is fantastic. Awesome. So have you been using it to write your next book?
Yeah, I've been using it for dialogue. It's been great for when I want to do dialogue. You can do another feature if you hold down the button and you just say dialogue on.
Dialogue on.
See the little quote marks there? What that means is that you can just, every time you hold down and add a sentence, you can keep adding sentences, then add, click again, you know, click it without anything in, you know, without saying anything, and it'll just do paragraphs of dialogue back and forth, and you can go back later on and said, he said, she replied, etc.
That's cool, because, yeah, you'll have breaks of, like, unattributed quotes because they'll be back and forth. That's clever.
Yeah. Tell you what, man, just in general, the ability, like, voice recognition is just at an all-time best it's ever been. I like just now I was holding this while you guys were
Where
speaking
are you
naturally.
Asked.
Wait, who are you talking to? You talking to your girl?
Let me see this. Yeah, I know.
Are you bug fixing?
What are you doing? Brian Robert asked.
Ooh, here we go. Live Q&A. Live Q&A.
A little bit of one. I'd like to imagine that he's live on stage at the Apple keynote and like, and yeah. Steve Jobs is like, hold on, let me fix that right now. Let me test that. And then
yeah. So anyhow, the goal is it's not going to be like 100% perfect, but for a lot of stuff, it's way better than saying. I counted the number of syllables it takes to do things like quotation marks, et cetera, and all that. And it's crazy
and it also disrupts the flow of storytelling, right? Like,
yeah,
you can enter anyone who's told night stories to your kids has gotten to that place where you're in the moment and you are just telling a story, and it seems like this frees it up to where you only need to let go
each paragraph,
yeah, each paragraph or each sentence.
For each pair, you let go for you hold it down for each sentence.
Yeah.
Right.
And then you confirm each paragraph.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I'm assuming becomes very automatic as you get familiar with it.
That's awesome. You get very used to it. Cause I was talking to Peter Wax, who was telling me about how Kevin J. Anderson would dictate books. Cause I was like, how do you dictate books? Cause a lot of times it's just empty pauses. He's like, you hold down the button while you say something and you let the button go.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, and that modality got me thinking about like just playing around with voice dictation, studying techniques of other people. And then like, okay, if I just do one sentence at a time, because originally we talked about the iPhone app, if I just press this for a period or quite, I'm like, oh, well, I can make it guess what that sentence is. It's not always right, but it's like I tested this. I took a bunch of books like John Grisham books and other books, and I built an app on my desktop where I would put these books in there and figure out like how things were broken up. And then I would test story voice against that, saying, if I say this, do I get the same result?
Right.
And again, the biggest limitation actually, you know, it's not always going to be perfect. Sometimes it's going to make wrong guesses, but it's accurate enough. The biggest problem has been actually the word recognition technology, and that's handled by Siri. And, mm-hmm. and if you've used Google Voice, whatever, you know, that's the most frustrating thing for me is when I use this is, the punctuation engine works pretty well, well enough for a first draft. But so is that
something that's on the roadmap of using? Because I think sometimes when you dictate stuff to Siri, you'll get like the blue dots, right? When it's like, oh, I don't know what those words are. Is that something that you can use outside of, I guess, the standard Siri button? Because that's on like
I can't. It's not really easy. I wanted to create like a. I tried, looked up every resource I could to try to create a library of words and stuff to say like, hey, let me teach it how to know this or recognize that. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't. There could be a more advanced one that would go way beyond what I could do, which would have to intercept before or something, but it gets into being tricky. And so I'm just hoping at some point Apple lets us have our own dictionary for Siri that lets us add things. In the meantime, what you can do is add things to your you can train Siri using Notepad by correcting it. It remembers how you corrected it. Or you can add things to your phone book, like weird names. Like Kevin J. Anderson was asking me, like, well, how would I do Bene Gesserit? Why would Kevin J. Anderson need a new Bene Gesserit? Okay, mm-hmm. It's the Dune books. And I said, well, if you add that to your, you know, your address book, et cetera.
Okay. So what's next for Story Voice then? What are you doing with it now? You got it on the store?
Well, it's improving it. It is. I've had 120 people who, you know, sign up for the beta, and I got good feedback from a couple dozen people on it. And I've tried to, you know, adapt as what I can. There's certain things you can't. I've had people make some feature requests that I'm like, if I was Daedalus, you know, or Ulysses, and I had 8 developers, I could do this. Mm-hmm. My goal is just to try to make the smartest, say this, try to figure out where the punctuation thing goes and try to improve it and just listen to feedback from people, figure out what are things that I can tackle and improve it steadily. And then, you know, people point out, like, if there'd be a Mac desktop version may not be too out of the question because I can use a lot of the same code. An Android version I want to do, but the problem with an Android one will be this uses some stuff built into iOS, the natural language processing parser, which is brilliant, which there's not a corollary one in the Android kit that works like this. So it'll take some serious dev to do that. But I want to. I've been learning, you know, on the side, learning more about Android development so I can do that.
So what have you thought about in terms of being able to show this off? Because my marketing hat is going on right now, and I'm thinking in terms of, like, well, there needs to be some kind of video that demonstrates how it could be done, maybe some kind of
StoryVoiceApp.com.
Do we have a video? Can we go to StoryVoiceApp.com and take a look at the video?
There's like there's been a tutorial video here on the site that kind of walks you through the process of making a Story Voice document and going through the learning the modality stuff that we were doing at the start of the episode.
I was going to ask, like, it seems to me like what I would love to see is it could be a 10-minute recording of something where you live get to see everything created through Story Voice. Maybe like what you publish a free short story and then say, here's how I made this in. Actually, if you're going to do it as a stunt, it seems like you would say, hey, everyone on Twitter, give me the name of a planet, give me this, give me that, give me the other thing, and in 10 minutes, I'm going to post a short story involving all of those. And so they do that, and then you post the story, and you're like, here's a video of me doing that in 10 minutes.
And please acknowledge Andrew. He's going
to Andrew's about to knock his nose off by tapping it so hard.
We'll talk offline. I've got a version of that that's even crazier.
Oh, great. Like,
Yes, Brian, your 100% instincts I think are great on that.
You talked about training it or rather testing it against, you know, existing literature. I think that would also be interesting to say, like, hey, this is me doing it live against this written piece. You can watch me do it in real time or however, and then compare the two.
What I want to do right now is the phase, because, like, I've had friendly people use it and who say very friendly things to me about it. I've had great, you know, touching stories. One of the users, and this sounds like, I swear to God, this sounds like a made up thing. Like, but I had a woman who lives in an assisted living facility, has been using it because she has arthritis, and she's been using it to document the stories of other people who live there.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's great.
You know, and you get this email and you're like, holy cow, I got to make sure this thing is good, you know. Yeah. And I have a friend who's going through vision, losing reduced vision, whatever she's using. I'm trying to make it more accessible, you know. And so right now what I want to do is, I've had friends use it who say nice things. Now it's going out into the world of anybody else, like, what's this? What did I just pay $3 for? And now it's learning how to make it sure that I can express what it does, don't overpromise, and deliver what it's supposed to do and help people use it. So I want to spend the next couple of weeks doing that before I go crazy into, like, everybody check it out, because
got it.
So you're in
a soft release period right now.
Yeah, it's 1.0, and it's good enough, I think, to be released. I've had friends, I have pro writers, Peter Wax has been using it on a regular basis. I have friends that are heavy writers that are using it as a production tool, but I got to make sure that the average person who comes into it, and some people, I've gone, out of my way. Like if you find it in the App Store, the first thing is a video. I have a 30-second video, the demo, that I narrate it. And then on screen, the text tells you what it does I have text explaining what it does. And the text I'm using to explain the app is explaining the app. I put Story Voice app out there because it's like, watch that video. I'm telling watch this 2.5-minute video, because once you do that, you go, oh, you know, and it's that, I've tried to make this one button as easy as possible.
So again, hold it down while I'm talking, let go when I'm not talking, tap once to make it a paragraph. All I want to do is play with it. I used to think that I'd never be able to write a book. That was before Story Voice. Yeah, look at that, man. That's amazing.
Yeah, isn't it? I mean, once you get into the groove of it, it's fun. And then it gets, when the voice recognition system messes up a word, it gets a little bit annoying because you're like, everything else works. But it's, for me, it's my favorite tool now for just dictating things in general, not having to say period, not having to do that. And the sentence paragraph modality helps the way I think.
And so is there a copy to clipboard function on here?
You should be able to just
under share, somebody. Maybe. Yeah. Copy. There you go.
Yeah.
So you can just copy it that way.
Glad you could answer that question. I should have known this.
Yeah. No. I'm doing it right now. So you could compose it, paste it. Yeah. There it is.
Yeah.
Very cool. Like,
back this up, folks. Back it up.
So what's your game plan? Like you're in soft release right now. You want to get the feedback and figure out what works and what doesn't work for folks. When you pull the trigger, is there a timing situation?
I think it's just a ramp up. I think that it's like, I have, on Twitter, I said, hey, check this out. I'll probably send a thing out on my email list tomorrow. And then it's a build up. And then probably once I feel that I'm comfortable with where it's at, then I have something happening in a couple weeks book related, which I will be able to talk about in approximately 4 days or 5 days, which will be kind of big. And I'll be able to use that as a platform to talk about this a little bit. And I think it's just building that up because NaNoWriMo's in November. I want to get this thing. I just want to get it as good of an app as it can be.
Oh, that's great to tie it into an organic influx of all of a sudden people are trying their first time novels. And basically you're saying, look, for $2.99.
If you are a very verbal writer.
Yeah. No matter who you are, all of you can write your book and it'll be super easy. That's brilliant. That's great.
You make something and you want to go, hey, everybody, look what I did. But as we've learned is, there's friends and family react one way and then the rest of the world reacts another, and it's not their fault. You've got to communicate what it does. You've got to teach them how to do it. You've got to manage expectations and deliver that. And that's what I need right now as I'm in that phase. And that said, everybody who likes this, if you leave it a nice review, it'd mean a lot to me.
Yeah, sure. And I would say that does the star ranking matter more than the actual written review? Because I know that our friends over at We Have Concerns are like, don't even bother to write words. Just give us 5 stars.
I don't know. Every system is different. And it's funny, too, because we'll talk about this. There's a controversy about some people who may or may not have tried to buy their way onto the New York Times bestseller list. And one of the things somebody put up there was they used a site that looks at Amazon reviews and ranks the worthiness of the reviews, to see how they said look at this. It's proof that the reviews look like they're bogus. And I started plugging in my books because I'm like, well, I know I've never faked a thing, and I won't even ask people to give me 5-star reviews because I never want to be accused of asking people.
Yeah, correct.
I will say I will. If you're like, I love your app, you're like, great, go review it on the App Store. If you're like, I love your app, I'm like, how can I help you? and I put in for this, I have a support system, by the way, using one of the support sites, so I can be able to do that. But anyhow, my thing is, if you like it, tell people, one, tell people you love it, and tell people why you like it. And that's with my books. I don't say don't write a review. Tell people why you like it. Tell people what you liked about it, because what really is good about that, and the reason I do it, it does two things. One is it encourages maybe more favorable, but the other thing is that it helps people look at that and go, oh, this is for me. If it's like, oh, best book ever, well, it's not going to be best book ever. But if it's like, man, I really love Station Breaker tech. I love the tech. I love this, the way that he just depicted, this realistic sort of stuff. And I'm like, oh, that's what I want in a book. I'll be happy.
Yeah.
And if it's so, or if I don't like tech stuff, I'd be like, oh, nerd alert.
So you mentioned, we were talking in the pre-show about this. Can you tell me the story about this story of the people who tried to get on the New York Times bestseller list and what happened?
Well, they did for a fleeting moment. So there was the publishing world was...
Before you say anything, let me just tell you what little I know. What I have heard is that it is fairly common for high-profile people to spend a bit of money to have ghost purchasers pick up their book at a number of stores. Any bestseller list gets their data somewhere, and there is a dollar value to there's a profit motive for somebody to figure out what are the stores that are being counted and when and how, and to get a bunch of people. Like, there's this whole ghost industry of people who you could buy purchases of your book to make sure it gets on the New York Times bestseller.
Let me tell you a story using story voice. It's a total story.
Oh,
it's a total story.
Okay? Tell a completely fictitious story.
A week ago, Andre, Andre... mine
Agassi
Andre
was talking to somebody who said, hey, have you heard about this book called blank? And I'm like, oh, you all pretend to be this person. I'm like,
just for ease of storytelling. Yeah,
no,
sure.
Should I have? And they said, oh yeah, this book called blank, these people are trying to make a movie on this book called blank, and they're actually trying to raise money, and they're telling people that they are going to be a number one New York Times bestseller. And this person said, I don't even know how you could do that. And I said, well, you can do that, but you got to do it smart. And I said, let me go look at this book called Blank's Amazon page. Book had not been released yet into the New York Times bestseller list. Had not released this before. I look at their Amazon page for this book called Blank, and I see, man, there are only 7 reviews. This book's been out for 10 days, and the reviews all came out within a 24-hour period and looked like the kind of things you'd get at a dinner table when you asked your friends to post nice things. 7 reviews. And I said, and these people are going to perhaps buy placement for a book called Blank on the New York Times bestseller? I said, yes, that is what they're telling people. They've actually raised some money to do this. I'm like, man, they haven't even astroturfed their Amazon right. This does not sound like it will go over well, but yes, it is possible to do that because there's a number of stores that New York Times looks to for reporting numbers. It's done all the effing time.
Right.
So, but I'm like, yeah, no, this is problematic. And also like, and then it's like, well, the people who are the writer of this book wants to star in a movie based on a book called Blank, and they've got a friend who was in his franchise, but you don't know who this friend is because nobody remembers this person from this franchise attached to it, book called Blank. And I said, listen, you can game these things, and I could name other books called Blank that gamed, and I could tell you how they were gamed, but more intelligently they were gamed, but they were good books, you know. And for me, I would never do something like that because the risk is too great. And I think I write good books, you know. I write good books, and I would never want it to get out there.
Basically, if I'm hearing you correctly, it's like it's not unusual to pull off a stunt move, but the downside is that if you get busted pulling a stunt, then that goes on your permanent record. You get ridden on your chart.
It goes on your permanent record, and you've got to do the stunt right. You got to know what you're doing. And so when I heard about a book called Blank, and I look at their Amazon page and their Goodreads, I said there's no track record here. If I was going to pull the stunt they're going to do, the first thing I would have done was not even trying to do anything sort of illicit, is if I had the money they had, I would have been going to cons, and I would have been throwing book blogger parties with an open bar. And I would have been meeting people. I would have been making friends and stuff, getting books in hands and things like that. And I would be spending the next five months or so building up a footprint for this thing, and befriending everybody I want to befriend, so that when it happens, people cheer the success instead of get critical. So anyhow, that's a totally unrelated, fictitious story. Never happened.
Sure, but in regards to this actual story we're talking about.
Let me go what happened. I'll explain what happened.
Sure. Okay, got it.
Fast forward, Thursday, again, that whole weird feverish dream I had where somebody said somebody's going to try to do this, whatever. And I'm like, no, this is it's a bad idea. The way they're doing it sounds bad to me. Thursday, I open up my news feed and I see, hey, New York Times book number one book delisted for suspicious activities or inconsistencies.
Oh, dear.
And so a book called A Handbook for Mortals, which I'd never heard of prior to Thursday, basically had launched at the number one spot on the New York Times bestseller list. Okay. And other people, YA authors who follow this list and people in the publishing industry looked at this and they're like, what the F is this book? We've never even heard of this book. How is this number one? It's not in bookstores. Nobody's seen this book before.
And it was had at the time, brand new publisher, this Geek Nation thing that was only around for a month or so, which is just incredibly suspicious. And someone's got like some Alexa ranking for their website.
Yeah, it's Phil Stamper. I actually talked to him on Twitter. So he was pointing out that Geek Nation had almost no traffic. Out of nowhere, all of a sudden, their first-time publisher, this book launches at the New York number one spot, which is suspicious. Now, I'm not saying that a bunch of people didn't go rush in and pre-order that book. I don't know. I will not say that that did not happen. But Phil said he put this out there and was like, hey, what's the deal with this? I've never heard of this book. Nobody's heard of this book. How is this number one? And he pulls up to get on the New York Times bestseller list, you need to sell 6,000 books in a week. That's it. 6,000 books in a week through bookstores, but you got to hit the right store. 6,000 books.
Right.
This one had orders for 19,000 copies.
That's a lot.
Phil gets calls or gets texts from booksellers who are saying, hey, again, this is all hearsay, saying, hey, yeah, our bookstore got a call. Somebody wanted to order like 100 copies or a couple hundred copies. They didn't care when to pick them up.
Oh, and so they were. That's sloppy work. That's sloppy craftsmanship right there.
So yeah,
Wasn't that they were sending people in to buy books. They were just calling up bookstores to pre-order books. Somebody was. We don't know who this was. Could be one person read this book, loved it, and decided to get a bunch of copies of the biggest fan in the world. It has nothing to do with the people who wrote it.
Sure.
So anyhow, long story short, this book had 19,000 copies, but people raised a stink. New York Times went and looked at it and said, yeah, this is suspicious, delisted it. And now there is a bit of a brouhaha over this and the book.
Well, so where's the brouhaha? Because either somebody was trying to game the system and they didn't game it very smartly and they got busted, or they are genuine and if strange bulk orders for the book. If it is the latter, it seems like the author would be all like, hey, ma'am, I can't believe you would accuse us of that. Let's fight. If it's the former, seems like somebody would sheepishly back away slowly, right?
So the response has been the author of the book and the people involved have said, hey, we don't know. We did like pre-order some copies because of some con appearances where we were going to be at, because they were going around Wizard World or doing those cons and stuff. Said the quote, we did have some calls made to some bookstores where some Wizard Worlds would be happening soon and would place the order saying, we don't care if you have books right now. We just want to make sure they're there before the event. That's the quote, which
it's a little sus.
It sounds awfully close to a admission.
Also, buying your own book from a retailer sounds like the not most efficient way to do that.
Well,
necessarily.
I don't know. A case could be made where you could say like, hey, all things, exactly. Or also, it's like, you know, we could sell them ourselves, but it wouldn't be counted, and we suspect that if they buy it at the store, it'll be counted.
Okay.
Now, this kind of blew up, and I don't know where things will go from there. And the publishing industry is not, for instance, a forgiving industry, and there are a lot of people who try very hard for success and can be very upset when somebody tries to game the system, whatever. You know, I've dealt with, you know, my own sort of issues with some people who, you know, think that, hey, you have this platform. I don't know if that's fair. And it's like,
I mean, is it any different if this wasn't your show or
for the record, they're right. It is unfair when somebody has a huge platform. I was thinking about this years ago. I was thinking about how, you know, Dave Ramsey, every time he puts out a new book, you know, he's got, you know, he's on a billion radio stations. He reaches a trillion people, and it doesn't matter what's in the book. It is no indication of quality when he comes out with a new book, and which, by the way, his books are generally quite good. But they could be bad, and it wouldn't matter because he's got a million people listening to him mm-hmm. every single day, and he's able to say, new book, buy it, and then people will buy it. Yes, it's unbalanced, and it's unfair. It's also reality. It's also the nature of the business that if you have a platform, you will sell more books than if you don't have a platform.
Yeah. And I guess and what we mean by fair, I mean, it's like, did I act unfairly? No. You know, and does somebody who, you know, do I act with deception or whatever? Not that I would tell you about. And I think that that being said is, you know, we love to pull our cons and our little games and our heists and our Diamond Club. And we love to do stuff like that. When we do it, though, we do it openly with something like
Correct.
Diamond Club.
Yeah. And I think that's the difference. And it's not us. That we don't fake a novel like the Diamond Club, get it to the top 10 on iTunes, and then turn around and announce we're legitimate authors, people. I think you can tell we're great.
But it's also... those are all real sales. That's based off of real sales data.
Right.
We did what literally anyone it's kind of like an award show that we know about. It's we have our fans and told our fans that
correct.
This thing existed.
We used our platform. Yeah. By the way, if you're unfamiliar, a few years ago we faked I'm going to use air quotes around faked. We crowdsourced an erotic fiction novel to piggyback on the
romance
the sales of E.L. James 50 Shades of Grey, and we put it out on Front Street. We used it as a story conceit. Hey, wouldn't it be fun for us to fake our way to number one? Everyone buy it and let's see if the ball gets going. Sure. And it worked very, very well. But it was a bit of performance art. And at the end of the day, we weren't hoping for everyone to take us serious as credible authors of romance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you have to figure out what game you're trying to play. And for what that the goal of that was let's do a fun sort of lark kind of thing. You know, myself as an author, you know, my goal is I want to build up a fan base. I want to find people who like the stuff I like, and I want to play the longer sort of game of that. And I'm not above, hey guys, let me come on Night Attack to talk about my book. But I'll then like, hey, let's put at the end of Weird Things, let's put part of the book. And I give my books out like crazy on my email list. When I can give my books away, I give them out. I'm like, no, just read them. If you like them, review them and tell people you like them. Yeah. You know, if I thought I was doing crap or I didn't have an audience for it, I wouldn't do that.
As best. Okay. So there is sort of a dark, a dark network of people who do things like what they call reputation management
companies.
PR companies like PR companies times 12. You think of a PR company, it's like, oh, I know the guy who books at the Tonight Show. I can get you on the Tonight Show. Let me make a call. Hey, you owe me a favor. Get on you put this guy on the Tonight Show. But a step farther on that is like there are people who there is an author who I know who wrote some very good self-help books, but then dipped into this whole the secret thing, just wish it and it'll come true, attract money by thinking really hard about it. And it really bummed me out, and I've distanced myself from that individual. And it used to be that I would type this person's name into Google and it would autocomplete scam. Mm. And when I looked at the books would be, you know, there'd be those AstroTurf 5-star reviews, but then a whole bunch of 1-star reviews. To my astonishment, 5 years after noticing this, I went back and I was like, oh, I wonder if that's still the case. All of those are gone. Nothing but 5-star reviews.
The reviews are gone.
All, individually, each of the, and it might be as direct as somebody, as somebody just saying, hey, here's a letter. We sure would like for you to have, I don't know, I'm making stuff up. I can imagine a scenario where everybody who posted a legitimate 1-star review was induced or was placed in a situation where they thought it was in their best interest to retract their 1-star reviews. And ultimately, there's a dollar figure that it costs to make all of that happen.
Hmm.
And these, and in fact, if you listen to, this will be my pick, by the way, John Ronson's book, So You've Been Publicly Shamed, talks about this. If there are people who are in such a damaging situation that they spend money and people through, I don't even want to say nefarious, I'm sure they're all legal and totally appropriate, but they can unmake bad reputations. They can make, sure. They can unmake videos from the internet and that stuff, essentially. I have always assumed there was some market for that, like for vanity purposes. If you're, for example, let's say a supermodel who, you know, how I made it through life by being beautiful, by a supermodel, you know, you probably want it to come out at least in the top 10. And they'll ask, these companies will say, well, how high do you want to go? Because at this, for you know, I'm making up all these numbers, $10 million or $10,000, we can guarantee it gets in the top 10 at $100,000. We can guarantee it's top three, that kind of thing. Uh-huh. So it just sounds like these guys played a game that has existed for a long time, but just did it sloppily and tried to do it themselves rather than paying big money to an expert.
Speaking of hypotheticals, I would say yes. I think that it sounded, because like in that fever dream I had, I'm like, about a week before, I'm like, they're doing it wrong. Week before, I'm like, the problem here is, if you were to then get a number one Times bestsellerist, everybody is then going to go look at Amazon and see that there's seven reviews. There's only one quote from one author about this. There's no Goodreads. There's nothing. There's none of that there. And if you look at the footprints, if you're trying to do this, you need to cover your bases. And if they had to, you know, take delivery of all those books, you know, that's $400,000. And so money was spent. A lot of money was spent to do this thing, or was, to this. The goal was, the ostensibly would appear the goal was, hey, have a number one selling best, never have a number one bestseller, and then flip it into a movie deal and make a big movie or finance a movie. And may or may not have heard details about that. But the point is, all right, you know, I mean, and it's that, oh, all you have to do is blank. All you have to do is blank. And it's like, oh, there's more to it. There's more to it.
In this hypothetical fever dream that definitely was not based in reality,
we should take some Tylenol.
This person NyQuil. Just assumed it was as easy as 1, 2, 3. Like, all you got to do is move books.
I talked to an intermediary, somebody else who would in the dream, who talked to these people and said that, oh, you know, it's their, you know, that's just do this. And this person was skeptical that you could do it. I'm like, no, you can game New York Times bestseller list, but you need to do blank, 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 blank to do that. And it's expensive, you know.
Yeah.
My strategy is I love to write books. So I just write books, and I've never had a New York Times bestseller. I have Amazon bestsellers, but I never had a New York Times bestseller.
Sure. Know? Sure. But having said that, man, like that's a tangible number of books, 6,000.
Makes me want
to write a book.
If Amazon, if New York Times counted ebooks the way, if they did it in a fair way, I would have been New York Times bestseller easily with Angel Killer. Easily.
Yeah.
They don't.
Interesting. All right. Well, hey, man, my pick was what again?
You've been publicly shamed.
Yeah, by John Ronson.
I'm going to publicly shame you.
Super good. Super good. Really enjoyed it. It takes there's a number of tales in there that I remember seeing happen on Twitter and having had a fleeting, touching fleetingly as they passed by, like, oh, this is happening around me right now. And then he actually meets those people and tells their stories and talks about the complicated power that we have. The asymmetry of Twitter is a magical and strange and sometimes horrific situation.
Hmm. Bryce?
I'm going to pick. I just played a game recently that I think actually would probably fit pretty well here in After Things. It's called A Normal Lost Phone. Have either of you guys heard of A Normal Lost
Phone? No.
So it is a...
So it looks like it's an app that basically opens up as if you found a phone on the street.
And... Yeah, it's like a phone, not an iOS, but it's like a phone OS that you play this game through. And you are looking through this person's text messages and their emails, and you are trying to figure out what happened to this person. I think when you start the game, it shows you the title screen and says, you have found a phone. Find out what happened to it.
That's brilliant.
And there's a little bit of light puzzle solving, And I'm gonna.
I would imagine like cracking their password. You have to go through and try their birthday or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I'm gonna say this in a non-spoilery way, but it frustrated me when I first found out about it. This story is told in you can tell it's from like England or some sort of UK.
Oh, they spell color with a U. Savages.
No. Well, and so they do. They format numbers and they format certain stuff in a certain way.
So you're just saying, be aware that in other parts of the world, it might not go month, day, year.
No,
it might
what I'm saying is, understand that might not be the right way to do it. It's inconsistent.
Oh,
stuff might be a little inconsistent.
They celebrate 9/11 on November 9th.
In any case, I think it's a really charming game. It's about an hour and a half, 2 hours or so. Lots of really good visuals. There's a soundtrack while you're thumbing through the phone. This person's music library is playing, and so you're kind of listening to their.
That's great. So you get into their headspace for all that.
Yeah,
very cool.
And it's only like $3 on Steam. It's on iOS and it's on Android right now. And they're working on a sequel called, I think it's called Another Lost Phone or a Second Lost Phone, something like that. And it's not a direct sequel. It'll be a spiritual sequel.
Keep finding his lost phones.
Who are you? you finally. Yeah,
I'm the phone finder.
The last game is like you steal phones. It's all about going around stealing people's phones.
It's an endless runner game. Yeah.
Smuggled phone up your what? Because you're in prison for being a phone stealer.
But yeah, so that's a normal lost phone. Check it out, Andrew.
I have two picks. One, by the way, I love that. Like that whole kind of text. Based SMS sort of fiction thing is really become popular and to my surprise
I usually don't like it. I've played a few of those games that are specifically in like text message form and I usually don't love them. Mm-hmm. I usually don't love the medium, but mm-hmm. I think this is a little different than that. So
that's cool.
Yeah. Sorry,
I'll talk to you offline about my latest project here. Ooh, okay. Because now that Story Voice is out and I'm in maintenance mode, I'm working on another one. I got two picks. One is just, by the way, I watched this again, which was on Amazon Prime, which is Superbad. And what a fun movie. Superbad's 10 years old now.
I can't believe it.
You know, make you feel ancient. I've been learning stuff, looking for places to learn, stuff. I found some pretty good tutorials for learning stuff. And one of my, it's 10 years old this month, by the way, Superbad. One of my favorite places, there's a guy who does Swift tutorials on YouTube. He's called The Swift Guy. And at first, his tutorials were kind of a little bit too fast for me, and I had to stop and slow them down a bit because I'm like, wait, what's this? But now that I get more into doing, programming and stuff and following along and knowing what a lot of these things mean, I like the speed at which it moves because mm-hmm. instead of spending 40 minutes, I'm getting something in 12 minutes. Young kid, sure where he's from, Scandinavian country of some sort, I believe. I think his name's Sebastian. He's got a Udemy course, but the Swift guy... And I think it's swiftguy.com or the swiftguy.com. I really enjoy his videos. There's a couple other people who do some good ones, though. But I've been learning how to use Firebase, which is this Google system for doing authentication for apps. And, he had two 10-minute videos that just totally explained everything to me. I spent more time installing a piece of software to do it than I did actually having to, go through it. So
that's great.
I love it. He's making great videos, and I really enjoy that. So.
It's always really good when you can, find someone who is teaching stuff like in a tutorial manner, and you like really their voice and their style resonates with you. I think of Andrew Kramer from Video Copilot. They historically do tons of After Effects and all sorts of graphic stuff, and that's the sort of thing. Was like, yeah, I dig that guy, and I like the way that they teach stuff. So that's pretty cool that you found that with the Swift guy.
Yeah, it's been very helpful because he'll do this. Hey, how to do blank and a blank, and it's been great. So it's my pick, gentlemen. It's been great. It's
and after.
Been after. It's been after.
Yeah. Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.